asking, and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. It doesn't take a lot of study of the New Testament to realize God's plan is that local churches have elders, bishops, overseers, pastors, shepherds. These are all interchangeable terms for these men that oversee the local churches. This morning, I want to talk about the kind of men who become elders. You know, where do you get these men? How do men grow to become the shepherds of a local church? How do you develop this? Churches can and do exist for a time without elders. When Paul and Barnabas went through Antioch, Iconium, Lystra, Derbe, they didn't appoint elders the first day the church met. But in time they were appointed. And Titus 1 seems to be pretty clear. Until a church reaches that point, it's not everything it ought to be. You want to reach this point. This lesson, I'll just tell you, it's for men who maybe are close. Men who have the potential to serve as elders, to meet the qualifications, which we'll read in a moment, within a very short time. And I hope this lesson would challenge you, if you're in that group, you and your spouse, to examine things and say, okay, what can I do? What that needs, shall we say, fine-tuning? What needs strengthening? But there's also a second group, people who may be some years away. It's for those of you in high school to understand this is the process by which, when the time comes, we meet those qualifications. We need to understand that as young men, as young women, this is something we should always be working toward. I don't know, I've taught many a Bible class, I've preached many a lesson in which we discuss the qualifications of elders, and sometimes it's like it's Superman. You know, it's just got to be, you know, it's something rare that we're not saying these men can't be found, but they're going to be extremely rare. Now, Paul, when he lists the qualifications, and let's be turning 1 Timothy 3, he was writing about men, human beings, people who are imperfect, but he believed they could be found in churches to meet these qualifications. Verses 1 through 7, this is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous, one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony among those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. Flip over a few pages in your Bible or hit a couple of buttons on your electronic Bible and go to Titus, the first chapter, verse 5. For this reason I left you in Crete, that you should set in order the things that are lacking and appoint elders in every city as I commanded you. If a man is blameless, the husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination, for a bishop must be blameless as a steward of God, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but hospitable, a lover of what is good, sober-minded, just, holy, self-controlled, holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and convict those who contradict. And I want to give you one more along this line. 1 Peter the chapter. Let's read the first four verses there. And then we'll really look at our question. Where do you get these kind of men? Verse 1, the elders who are among you I exhort. I, who am a fellow elder, and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that will be revealed. Shepherd the flock of God which is among you, serving as overseers, not by compulsion but willingly, not for dishonest gain but eagerly, nor as being lords over those entrusted to you, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd appears, you will receive the crown of glory that does not fade away. You read these, and you read the whole list all at one time, and it does seem like a pretty formidable list. It's so many things. But if you have men who are consistently serving God over a period of years, I believe you find these kind of men. I firmly believe that at any point in a person's life, they can come to God and find grace and mercy from Him. If somebody has waited till they're of advanced age and they realize their need to serve God, by all means, repent and be baptized and become a child of God and serve Him. And I believe one's accepted. But it's hard for that man to become an elder, for one who waits. Because, well, think about, he said an elder. And by the way, as you look at the references, just for shortening it up, if I have a 3, that's 1 Timothy 3. If it has a 1, that's Titus 1. I got lazy typing this. He said he is blameless. He is above reproach. And we all know, as unfair as it may be, sometimes our mistakes follow us for a long time. You know, things we did as a younger man, people will sometimes still bring up. So it can sometimes be tough. The family qualifications. Look at 1 Timothy 3 again. Verse 4, he is one who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Titus, in the book of Titus, it's put this way. The husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of dissipation or insubordination. Man doesn't become serious about serving God until he's 45. Is he going to meet these qualifications? Is he going to have ruled his children well? Is he likely to have these faithful children? The truth is, I've seen some people in my life that I thought, that I believe that man would probably make a good elder. Very spiritually minded. You know, a good teacher, many of the other things. But he wasn't a faithful Christian when his children were younger. And he doesn't have these qualifications. And while in my mind there's the tendency to say, well, he would still make a good elder, he doesn't meet these qualifications. How about the fact that he's not to be a novice, a new convert? You know, a man just can't be a new convert. Now, this is just, I don't know if it's how much this relates to this question, but it's just sort of an interesting aside to me. Have you ever known people through the years that they've been Christians 5, 6 years more, and something would be said about them, say, you know, he's a pretty new convert. Then there'd be somebody else. They'd been baptized about a year ago. People are saying, you know, I believe, you know, we might want to get him to teach the auditorium class. And it's not innate intelligence is the difference. Folks who are zealous to grow and mature, they cast off the novice label a lot sooner than others. So, you know, there is some validity here. You know, think about that. How about a man who's an elder? You know, we all look right inside, but it said he must have a good testimony of outsiders. What do people of the community think? What do people that he works with think of him? People who work for him. And again, a man may have changed. But what's the testimony of those who are outside? Is it something that's negative? How about the qualification that he be able to teach? 1 Timothy 3:2. Or Titus 1. He must be one who is holding fast the faithful word as he has been taught, that he may be able by sound doctrine both to exhort and convict those who contradict. For there are many insubordinate, both idle talkers and deceivers, especially those of the circumcision, whose mouths must be stopped, who subvert whole households, teaching things which they ought not for the sake of dishonest gain. To be that man who can teach, that man who can take the false teacher and refute him, that needs a man who's put years of study into this, who's worked at it, who's developed these skills. Now, what I'm saying is, it is difficult. I don't want to use the word impossible, because it's not impossible. It's difficult to reach the age of, say, let's say 50, and say, you know, I think I ought to get serious about serving God, and then become an elder. But on the other hand, if people start out remembering their Creator in the days of their youth, which of these did we look at that would be that hard to attain to? Nobody, I'm not talking about people who've been perfect all their lives, but have been spiritually minded from their youth. Would they not have a good reputation in the community? People appreciate them? Would they not have developed through the years the knowledge to be a teacher? And if they are spiritually minded and concerned about things, have sharpened those skills, a spiritually minded young man sought a wife who was likewise spiritually minded, isn't it very likely that that's the kind of man who's ruled a house well, who's brought up faithful children? Because you've got two spiritually minded people working together to produce this, developing character. You know, again, I'm not saying it couldn't be done. What I am saying, though, is if this is done, if we serve God through the years, we ought to expect men to grow into these kinds of things. And along that same line, just the whole growth process. Again, we look at this list, and it just because it seems long, we just sort of, wow, that's a... We just start looking at this. How many of these things describe extraordinary Christians? How many of them don't describe, or are not intended to describe, every Christian? 1 Timothy 3. Okay, let's take out the fact, verse 2 says, the husband of one wife. For we know, first of all, the ladies won't have a husband. I mean, they won't be the husband of one wife. We know that men are not required to marry. And some men don't ever marry. So that takes, we take out the wife, we take out verses 4 and 5, the things about children. Blameless. Some translations say above reproach. How about temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. You know, if that weren't in 1 Timothy 3, we'd just say that's describing what a Christian ought to be, a disciple. Isn't that hard to find that person? Look at Titus 1. He has some of the same and he has a few different. Again, verse 6, we've got the wife and children, but then verse 7, blameless, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but hospitable, a lover of what is good, sober-minded, just, holy, self-controlled, holding fast the faithful word. What that is describing, very simply, is a Christian who has sought to put off the works of the flesh, Galatians 5, 19 through 21. You know, the anger, the wrath, the fornication, the adultery, the drunkenness, and to put on, develop the fruit of the Spirit, the love, joy, peace, long-suffering, kindness, gentleness. It's describing the person of 2 Peter 1 who has faith, but adds to that faith what? Diligence or knowledge. I'm sorry. For this reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue. To virtue, knowledge. To knowledge, self-control. To self-control, perseverance. To perseverance, godliness. To godliness, brotherly kindness. To brotherly kindness, love. For if these things are yours and abound, you will be neither barren nor unfruitful in the knowledge of our Lord Jesus Christ. If you have a congregation in which everyone is striving to mature, men and women alike, to develop these qualities, do you realize you've knocked out 90% of the elders' qualifications? Maybe you were born with a quick temper. Some of us were born that way. You know, maybe you were born a little too passive to do certain things that are required of a Christian. Over a period of time, we mature. And so, what are the few that are left? Able to teach? How about the wife, you know, having the wife and faithful children? Well, most of those growing, maturing Christians will end up getting married. You know, all I'm saying is, if you've got a growing congregation, and I don't mean by numbers on the board, those are good. I'm talking about people who are spiritually maturing. It ought to be expected. Another quality that I see that men that become elders, the way they become elders is they become unselfish. In Titus 1, verse 7, he said, a man must not be self-willed. 1 Peter 5 warns about being a lord over those entrusted to you. You know, folks who are filled with pride and who are, you know, think too much of themselves, you know, they may look at the office of an elder as the way to put people under their thumb. Just, you know, really be in charge. He said, no, elder is not a man who is self-willed. He is a man who, Hebrews 13, 17, I think is a very key passage in this study of elders. Obey those who rule over you and be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give account. Elders are watching out for souls. Watching for souls can be a time-consuming job. It can be something that takes up a certain amount of a man's spare time. 1 Peter 5 makes the point that a man who would be an elder must not do so by compulsion, but willingly. Not for dishonest gain, but eagerly. People who are consumed with self, they don't make good elders because they don't want to give the time to looking out for others, for caring about others, seeing to their needs. What is needed in this group? What does this brother, this sister need? You know, okay, 1 Peter, you know, 1 Timothy 3, 2, an elder must be hospitable. Hospitality takes time and resources. It doesn't have to take a lot of resources, but it does take some, and it takes time. Okay. Now, how many Christians should this rule out? How often should this be a problem? That we say, well, you know, brother so-and-so, he's got a lot of it going for him, but he's self-centered. You know, he has trouble thinking of others. You know, he wouldn't ever have anybody in his home because
You know, he's too worried about it might cost him a couple of dollars to buy, you know, some beans and potatoes. You know, you wouldn't dare call him on a Saturday morning with a problem, because Saturday is his day. I'm not saying you wouldn't have that problem sometime, but isn't that a real problem if that's the issue? If we are as Christians not overcoming selfishness or self-centeredness to the point that that would ever be a stumbling block, we've got a lot bigger problems than the fact that we're not appointing elders. We're not making disciples. Disciples of Jesus do this. I understand sometimes there are men who grow and mature as Christians, and that able to teach, able to convict those who are contradicting the gospel, that's just an ability that they struggle and never are able to develop. I understand. I sympathize with men like that. I don't have sympathy for a man who would be eliminated because of this. And by the same token, it's on the chart and I didn't mention it as I went through, if it's because of his wife who's too self-centered, that's a problem too. Folks, this ought not be holding us up at all, ever. I guess in a way I've already said this, but I'm going to say it again. 1 Timothy 3:6, when it says, not a novice, not a new convert, it gives a reason, lest being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. When I see those people in 1 Peter 5:3, he says that would be lords over God's heritage, I suspect an element of pride is there. You know, many years ago, I read this, I think it was G. Campbell Morgan, may have been Spurgeon, denominational preacher who was asked, said, you know, if you had but one sermon to preach, what would you preach? And what preacher hasn't done that sometime? You know, you just can't come up with your idea and you say, well, what if I just had the one sermon and that becomes your sermon? He said, I'd preach against pride. I don't know that if you said, okay, John, you've only got one more sermon to preach, that that's going to be it. And yet, I'm struck more and more as time goes by how many times the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament alike, warns against pride, praises humility. It just, how often it speaks of pride as being at the root of this sin or that sin. And I'm saying all of that to say, if we've been growing again, we ought not be worried about the fact that, well, you know, brother so-and-so, he's an excellent teacher. You know, and he's got a lot of this, but ooh-wee, he sure does think a lot of himself. You know, that ought not be a problem. That just ought not ever to be an issue. Well, I say this, and then I'm going to get to one, unfortunately, I think it's been a problem at times. There have been some men through the years that I looked at as a congregation, you know, being a congregation and say, you know, we're looking at appointing men to be elder. And there'd be a man or two that I would have to eliminate because I didn't see the backbone there. You know, there are people that I think in their own mind, somehow they think they're sweeter and more pious than Jesus. I got 5 minutes. You can't be serious, man. Okay, we're going to go fast then. Jesus overturned tables. When sin needed to be rebuked, sin was rebuked. Sometimes among his own disciples, who did he say, "Get behind me, Satan," to? That was one of his closest associates. A good shepherd will fight the wolves. He will stop the mouths of some. Acts 20, when he said, "Take heed to yourselves and to all the flock among which the Holy Spirit has made you overseers," he said, "I know this, after my departure, savage wolves will come in among you, not sparing the flock. Also from among yourselves, men will rise up speaking perverse things to draw away disciples after themselves." A man who lacks the backbone to stand up to that does not need to be an elder, cannot be an elder. His job is to watch for the souls of those entrusted to him. And if he can't do, if he's not willing to rebuke, if he has lacks courage, he won't do that. Oh, what'll happen? A man like that, you know, he might rebuke that person who's very timid and shy and would never dare speak back. But that man who's taken to the pulpit with boldness to proclaim false doctrine, that defiant member, he'll back down and back away. He won't deal with that. That's a problem sometimes. But why is that? When Jude said, While I was very diligent to write to you concerning our common salvation, I found it necessary to write to you, exhorting you to contend earnestly for the faith which was once delivered to the saints. For, he goes on to say, they've crept in unnoticed. False teaching has come in. He was addressing that to the saints. All saints ought to be willing to test the spirits whether they're of God. 1 John 4 and verse 1. Every Christian ought to be involved in restoring the erring, Galatians 6. I want to say this. I understand this is not the nature of some people. But let me ask you this. If a man has a nature that says, if somebody crosses me, I'm going to pop him right in the mouth, we expect that man to overcome his nature and learn not to lash out in anger. We expect a man like that, rightfully, because God expects him to. By what token do we not, the man whose very nature is, well, I'm going to hide under the bench when trouble starts. Why isn't he expected to change his nature? There are no natural born Christians. Everybody has to change in some way, somehow, to be a Christian. Some of us have to learn more patience. Some of us need to learn how to fight in a spiritual way. This will be a problem sometimes. It shouldn't be. Grow a backbone. And I don't mean an argumentative, mean-spirited nature. All those things we said earlier about gentleness and kindness and long-suffering, those still apply. Be like Jesus. He was patient. He was loving. He laid down his life for his friends. But when they needed to hear, "Get behind me, Satan," they heard it. I think my time's going to run out on me during this point, but I just want to say, sometimes when churches start looking for elders, they look for men who are experts in finance, management, those things, they play into the role of an elder. Elders oversee not so much the work of the church as the church. They oversee the people. They shepherd souls. They're people who care. Now, where are you going to find people who care about one another? Who care about the spiritual development? I don't think that ought to be hard to find. What are we taught repeatedly? To love our neighbor as ourselves. To, you know, the greatest commandment is, of course, to love the Lord your God. The second's like it to it. Love your neighbor as yourself. As Christians, our responsibility is to, when we see a brother erring, James 5, is to restore that brother, turning from the error of his way. Because we care. We care about souls. How do men become elders? They choose to serve God. And they choose to grow the way that God says they ought to grow. They marry women who have those same concerns. There are a few, very few, such as ability to teach, that are peculiar to them. But by and large, men who commit themselves to spiritual growth, well-rounded spiritual growth, can grow into the work of an elder. I appreciate you listening. If you have any questions about this, I'll be glad to talk with you further. We've heard through a little bit of this, but I do appreciate your attention this morning.